morning. Welcome back to the Shia. Nice to see everyone here this morning. This obviously has to be the Shia of the century, obviously. To keep up with the times that we're in, everything is of the century, right? This is the greatest Shia in the century. Who knows? Maybe it is. The opportunities that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us, who knows what they are. Okay, we're looking at the Derech Hashem of the Ramchal, and one of the unique features of this Sefer, of the Derech Hashem, and of the writings of Rav Moshe Chaim Lutzato in general, is his ability to deal with really mystical ideas, which are really the realm of Kabbalah. It's Kabbalah for non-Kabbalists, if you like. We are all in this room, I'm assuming, non-Kabbalists, including myself. But that really only means we haven't been educated in the terminology and the literature of Kabbalah. But nevertheless, yeah, Herbert, you are a Kabbalist? Yes, that's right. Herbert knows in previous shiurim, I've always said about Kabbalists, that those who know don't say, and those who say don't know. Right? And therefore, when I say to you that I'm not a Kabbalist and I know nothing about it, maybe I do, and you just don't know, and you'll never know. But I assure you that I'm not. Right? This is the. But you still don't know because those who know don't say. That is the. That's the principle of genuine mekubalim. They don't shout it from the rooftops that they are involved in Kabbalah, because Kabbalah, by definition, was also always esoteric. In other words, it was always limited to an inner circle of Talmid Chachamim. It was never public property, right? And even though it became more public with the writings of the Arizal in the 1500s, more accurately, Reb Chaim Vital, his Talmud, wrote up all the thoughts of the Arizal. Arizal, to the best of my knowledge, wrote nothing, but the Reb Chaim Vital, his Talmud, was his scribe. But once you get to 200 years later, and after the Shabtai Tzvi event, so then Kabbalah was largely shelved in most educational systems because it had proven itself to be too dangerous. So there's something about Kabbalah and the study of Kabbalistic writings which is a double-edged sword. On the one hand, it is very inspirational, it's very profound, it's very interesting. On the other hand, it can drive you crazy. It can drive you crazy. In other words, you can easily overdose on it, and if you overdose on it, you can go crazy. And the Shabtai Tzvi story was really an unmitigated disaster in the entire Jewish communities of Central Europe and in the 1600s. And it was based on a misunderstanding of Kabbalah, a misuse of Kabbalah, a deliberate abuse of Kabbalah on the part of Shabtai Tzvi himself. And because Kabbalah is so difficult to define exactly, he got away with it. Because no one knew exactly what is accurate Kabbalah and what is bogus Kabbalah. And this is still true today. You can go online, I don't recommend it, but you could go online to Kabbalah.com, right? And at Kabbalah.com and various other similar websites, you will get bogus Kabbalah. In other words, you'll get people who have dipped their big toe in Kabbalistic writings and picked out a few interesting ideas and woven them together in their own way and presented as if it's genuine, but actually it's not. But it's just difficult to tell because of the nature of the ideas. I'm saying all this by way of introduction because today's Shia, you can see here, I've subtitled the Shia, Creation on Two Levels, Interaction Between Physical and Spiritual Worlds. So this is already taking us into more specifically mystical ideas, that in addition to the physical world that we see around us, the world that we can measure and observe and touch and feel and smell and taste, that world, in addition to that, there's a whole other world. There's a whole other world of spiritual forces and spiritual powers which exist in a different realm, but they exist side by side with the physical world. That is really, in a sense, the definition of mysticism. Somebody asks you, how do we define mysticism? Mysticism is the belief in a spiritual world which is not subject to our physical senses or our physical sciences. We can't measure it or describe it, but we believe that there exists beyond our physical world, there is another world. Now, the truth is, we are all, to a certain extent, mystics, because simply to believe in God is a mystical belief. To believe in the power of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who is invisible, who cannot be seen or measured, to believe in the neshama is a mystical belief. To believe in Olam Haba is a mystical belief. So we already have, if we unravel some of our emuna is partly, at least, part of has in it definitely mystical elements. However, the Mekubalim delved much deeper into this mystical reality. And what I brought you here is a very beautiful piece of Ramban. So the Ramban predates Moshe Chaim Luzzatto by over 400 years. Right, but and the Ramban also doesn't use Kabbalistic terminology per se, but he's considered to be one of the Rishonim who is closest to the Kabbalistic tradition. And in the very, very beginning, you don't get more the beginning than the pasuk that I brought you here on page one. The pasuk you can see here at the top of page one is Bereishis Bara Elokim Es HaShamayim VeEs HaAretz. So we're starting from the beginning, right? This is the beginning of all beginnings. God creates heaven and earth. And the question here is, what really is Shamayim? That's really the question. And I'd like to point out that throughout the Tanakh, both the Chumash and Tehillim and the Ksuvim, the word Shamayim always has a very important ambiguity to it. Because Shamayim means the heavens, as in the sky. You know, the HaKadosh Baruch Hu put the solar system is Bashamayim, right? But actually, we use the word Shamayim differently completely. Shamayim means the spiritual world. When we speak about Yirat Shamayim, this isn't that we have fear from the sky, right? It's not a relationship to the Shamayim of the sky. It's the Shamayim, which means the spiritual dimension, the presence of God in this world is Bashamayim. So Shamayim has this very important ambiguity, and you need to know when you're dealing with Psukim what is being meant here. So what does it mean here, Bereishis Bara Elokim Es HaShamayim VeEs HaAretz? So you might think it simply means he created the heavens, meaning the stars and the sun and the moon and the sky and all the planets, etc. And HaAretz is the earth, right? That's what you might think it means, but that is not the case according to the Ramban. I'd like to learn with you a little bit of this Ramban, because this Ramban is an excellent introduction to what we're going to see in the writings of the Derech Hashem 400 years later. So, everybody with me? I'm looking at the Ramban. V'ata, and now. Of course, I picked out a little paragraph here. He's gone through what Rashi says and disagrees with it, and he's gone through what other people have said and disagrees with it, and now the Ramban says, now I'm going to tell you the truth. V'ata, Shema Pirush HaMikra. Listen carefully, and you will find out what this pasuk means, right? We're talking about these first seven words, the opening, the introductory verse to the entire Torah. Al Pshuto Nochon Umboro, it's simple and it's straightforward. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Boro Kol HaNivroim Me Afisa Muchletes. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world ex nihilo, yesh me'ayin. Right, something out of nothing, which the scientists, of course, consider impossible. There is no something out of nothing, but the scientists have been faced in the last 50 years with the impossibility of what they call the Big Bang. The Big Bang was, in fact, something out of nothing. Right, so they can't explain that in the laws of physics. Physics is about causality, and every effect has a cause. And to say that this happened and there was no cause, there was no force ante, there was no force before the Big Bang, that the Big Bang happened, in inverted commas, by itself, goes against all the laws of physics and all the laws of science, right? When you say this to a scientist, they've invented a wonderful word to answer this question, and that is, it's a singularity. Singularity means it's an exception to the rule. All of science is about cause and effect. Everything that happens in this world has causes, but the Big Bang was a singular exception to that rule, and it's a singularity. It happened only once, that something came into being from nothing. Our emunah is that, of course, it wasn't from nothing. It was HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created everything, me afisa muchletes, from absolute nothing. In other words, there was no matter. There was nothing there before the world came into existence. And now he gives us a little bit of Hebrew. V'ein etzleinu b'loshon HaKodesh, b'hotzoas hayesh mi'ayin ela loshon boro. The word boro, beis reish aleph, means creating ex nihilo. Right? He's contrasting it to other words which appear during in Bereishis chapter 1, which is Yitziro, Vayitzer Hashem Elokim, or Vayas Hashem Elokim. Vayas and Vayitzer are all actions of making and creating, but they're not ex nihilo. They are taking raw matter and shaping it into something else, right? But to actually create matter out of nothing, that's only the word boro. Ve'ein kol hanase tachash ha-shemesh olamala hova min ha'ayin ha-tachat chola rishona. We have no experience, he says, in the world in which we live, of boro at all. Boro was a one-off. It was indeed a singularity in the sense that it was a one-off. HaKadosh Baruch Hu never did it again, to bring things into existence from complete nothingness. So here comes the Ramban, beautifully giving us a perush al ha-Torah. What was it exactly that God created on day one? What did he really create? Bereishis bara Elokim es ha-shamayim ves ha-aretz. What did he create on day one? From the account we get later on, we only are told that God creates light on day one, nothing else. Vayom Elokim yihyar. So he says, yes, there was light, but in addition to light, there was something else he created. Look what he says here. Avol, I'm in the third line of the Ramban. Hotzi min ha'efes ha'gomor, from absolute nothingness, what did HaKadosh Baruch Hu create? Yesod dak ma'od. A yesod means some primal matter, some initial matter. Dak ma'od ein bo mamash. Something which is so fine, it has almost no reality to it. It's something which is completely pure potential. Right? Funnily enough, if you read the writings of modern scientists, cosmologists who speak about the Big Bang, they speak of what was created in the Big Bang, what they call a soup. They use the word soup, which you would have thought not a very scientific thing to use, right? So, a soup of subatomic particles. Lots of neutrons and electrons and all sorts of bits and pieces which hadn't yet combined to make atoms, hadn't yet combined to make molecules. It was just all bits of subatomic particles came into being. And then there was a process where certain bits connected with other bits, and suddenly an atom was created, and then a few atoms got together and a molecule was created, and a few molecules came together. They believe that all this happened randomly. Right? Most extraordinary belief of scientists, that the most fabulous and sophisticated and intricate world that we see around us came into being randomly, right? So our emunah is not like that. Our emunah is that there's a chochmas haboreh, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created it all. But it's interesting, this is what the Ramban says, that he brought into existence a yesod dak, ein bo mamash. I'm looking here at the fourth line of the Ramban that starts with the word mamash. Aval hu koach mamtzi. It's a very interesting word. This koach mamtzi means it had in it a force that it could bring other things into existence. Lahamtzi is the hifil, is to bring. In other words, it's like there are certain cells in the body which are potentially any cells. What do they call? They call them T cells, or cells which could become anything. They could become a skin cell. They could become a nerve cell. They could become a brain cell. They are potential cells, koach mamtzi, muchan lekabel hatzura, and they are all able to then be shaped, velotzeis min hakoach alapol, and to develop from potentiality to reality. For hu achomer harishon, nikra leyavonim Hiuli. He says, in the writings of the Greek scientists, he's talking about Aristotelian science, there is this Greek word of Hiuli. The Hiuli is this type of primal matter. And that's the only thing that God brought into existence, Yesh Me'ayin. But these were, if you like, the building blocks. It was the Lego set, right? Out of which everything else was created. The stars, the sun, the plants, the humans, the animals. Everything was created from these atoms and these subatomic particles and these molecules simply combined in different ways to make different items. The Achai Yuli Lo Borodova. After he brought into existence this raw material, this unshaped raw material, he no longer created anything ex nihilo. You shouldn't think that, well, the Ramban is saying, you shouldn't think that the whole 6 days of creation is, when it says HaKadosh Baruch Hu created trees, that there was nothing, and then there was a tree. That the tree was created yesh me'ayin, and it wasn't. The tree was created from the matter that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created on day one. He created all this soup of bits and pieces, which then came together to create a tree and then to create an elephant. Yes, so tohu vovohu for the Ramban is, it is matter with no form, formless matter. The giant Lego set, which hasn't been clicked together yet to make anything, right? But it's there, right? And that was created Yesh Me'ayin. And after that is brought into existence, then there is the possibility of combining it in all sorts of different ways and creating the universe as we know it. And it's a very... articles have been written about this Ramban in the light of modern science and the Big Bang and the soup, subatomic particle soup. The correlation between them is quite interesting. So he says, after this initial act of creation, sort of ex nihilo, something from nothing, he never again did an act of beria, aval yotzar v'oso. He is now shaping and forming this raw matter into ever more developed realities. Kimimeno himtzi hakol. Everything comes from this original matter. V'hilbish hatzuros v'tikin osam. And he gave them a tzura, gave them a shape, right? He gave them the moon and the stars and the whole, all the galaxies and the constellations are all made from these, from this initial yesh me'ayin, the tikin osam, and he made them work. Okay, so far so good. And then in the last two lines, he gives us another big principle. So this is a big principle of the Ramban. And actually, it makes an enormous amount of sense. It gives you a bit of a new appreciation of the whole of Bereishis chapter 1. The Bereishis chapter 1 is not like a magic set bringing into existence elephants and leopards and fish and sun and moon, yesh me'ayin. That's not what it worked, how it worked. HaKadosh Baruch Hu did only one moment of ex nihilo, and then the rest is shaped and brought together. Of course, the truth is, the scientists tell us that if you look inside an atom, every atom, everything is made out of atoms, right? Inside an atom, a large part of atom is actually space. There is, between the electrons and the neutrons, there's a lot of empty space inside each atom, which is why radio waves and gravity waves can travel through seemingly hard objects, because actually inside each atom there's a lot of empty space. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu put together the world in such a way that the initial material that was used was simply combined and recombined in various different ways to create all the things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to bring into existence. And now look at the last two lines of this Ramban, Vada. So when he says Vada, it means, and it's important to know. It's important to know. Everybody with me? Ki ha-shamayim v'chol asher bohem chome echod, v'ha-oretz v'chol asher bo chome echod. There were two different types of Lego sets, right? There are two different types of primal matter. One was physical primal matter, and one was a type of spiritual primal matter. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what does it mean, Es HaShamayim V'Es HaAretz? Right? It means that the Oretz were the physical atoms as we know them, but Shamayim refers to a whole different creation, a creation of spiritual entities. And then he ends up in the last line, HaKadosh Baruch Hu bara elu shenehem me'ayin, and both of these were created out of nothing, or shenehem levadom nivraim, and only these two can be said really to be nivra, in the sense of the word bara, which it means from nothing, v'hakol nase mehem, and from these everything was made. So what he's saying really is, we have really a world, a two-layered world, a world in which there are physical objects, which we're familiar with, and there are also spiritual entities. And these spiritual entities were created in the very beginning. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created somehow these raw materials, which later on combined to make neshamas, and to make malachim, and all the things that we believe in the spiritual world were also created in the same way. And that's what it means, Bereishis Bara Elokim Es HaShamayim V'Ha'aretz. That from day one, from the first seconds, right, HaKadosh Baruch Hu put into this world a physical universe and a spiritual universe, right? What he doesn't say in this explanation of his is how these two worlds interact with each other. He doesn't deal with that yet. And that's what the Derech Hashem, I chose to give you this Ramban on this Pasuk as a sort of an intro. Because the Derech Hashem is interested in how the physical and spiritual worlds coexist and interact with each other. In other words, there is, for every physical being in this world, there is a correlation, there is a mirror image or a mirror power of some sort in the spiritual world, which gives it life, which gives it energy. Right? There is a certain parallelism between the physical and the spiritual world. Living here in Yerushalayim, maybe it's worth mentioning, you might be familiar with this idea, on the idea of Yerushalayim shel mata and Yerushalayim shel mala. Have you come across this idea? That just like there is a Yerushalayim in this world, which is full of people and buildings and land and traffic jams and various other things, right? In parts of this world, there is Yerushalayim shel mala. So maybe Yerushalayim shel mala doesn't have traffic jams. Probably not. You agree with me? There are no traffic jams there. But there is a parallel Yerushalayim, and in some sense, there is in the spiritual world a Yerushalayim which is waiting in some way to be fully realized. In fact, the Tosfos mentions in one place in Shas that it's interesting that the word Yerushalayim itself is a grammatically, it's a dual form. You know, Hebrew has got a singular and a plural, like all other languages, but it's unique in that it has a third grammatical form, which is dual. In other words, einayim doesn't mean lots of eyes, it means a pair of eyes. And raglayim means a pair of legs. And misparayim means something which can cut because it's got two blades. It doesn't mean lots of blades, it means two. Right? And mechnesayim and enayim and yadayim, it all means a pair of hands. It doesn't mean a whole collection of hands, lots of them. It's not the plural of hands, it's the dual of hands. Similarly, so this ayim grammatical form always means a dual reality, something which only works because there are two parts to it. Right? Mechnesayim, trousers, only work because there are two parts to it. If there was only one part to it, it wouldn't work, right? So similarly, Yerushalayim is also a dual form. Yerushalayim is a dual form because there's Yerushalayim shel mata and Yerushalayim shel mala, because there is a spiritual reality which corresponds to the physical reality. And what happens in the Yerushalayim shel mala affects, in the upper Jerusalem, affects the lower Jerusalem. In other words, it's very much directly affected by the state, the spiritual state of Yerushalayim shel mala. So I've written for you here in English the original, just to summarize the Ramban, the original act of creation ex nihilo created two different types of potential existence, one physical and the other spiritual. From these two types of potentiality, all subsequent beings came to be. Okay, so this is the Ramban telling us how HaKadosh Baruch Hu started off the process of creation. Let's read now a little bit of the Derech Hashem of Rosh Chai B'Tzato. And he takes us first through this a little bit. Everybody with me? I'm on the second half of the page. which starts with the word chelkei, klal habriya. Are you with me? The different parts of the bria, of the creation in general, shnayim, are of a dual nature, gashmiyim v'ruchniyim, the physical and the spiritual. And this is the, I once heard Rabbi Steinsaltz speaking. Some of you might have heard Rabbi Steinsaltz speaking every now and again. He's very, very profound and not so easy to understand. But I remember one particular line that he said about the Klal Yisrael live in two different worlds all at the same time. We live in the physical and in the spiritual world at the same time. And then he said, we are amphibians. I like that. We're amphibians. He used this, the mushel of the amphibian, right? The fish can only be in the water and dogs can only be on the land, but there are some creatures which are amphibians, which smoothly can be in the water, go to the land and back to the water. What's an example of an amphibian? Penguins. Okay, penguins are amphibians. They waddle around on land, but then they dive into the water and they go back and forth. So it says, Klal Yisrael are amphibians vis-a-vis the spiritual and physical world. We smoothly move from one to the other, and that's what we're supposed to be doing. So he says here, the Klal Habriya is of a dual nature, spiritual and physical. Hagashmiim, the physical world, heyamurgoshim echoshenu. We can sense it with our five senses, right? Touch and feel and sound. Umitchalkim le'elyonim v'tachtonim. And it divides up into the upper and lower world. So elyonim and klal hagromim hashomaimim. Okay. So the upper worlds, the spiritual worlds, in some way are gramim. They are causes. They can cause things to happen. I'm not going to go into all the details here. I mean the third line. Okay, basically what he's saying here is, I'm not going to go into every detail of his, the language here is a little complicated. I thought it was, when I initially put it on the sheet, I thought it flowed easier, but he's assuming all sorts of knowledge that he mentioned earlier. Basically, the idea is that the relationship between the upper, between the spiritual and the physical world is very interesting, because primarily it's important to know that what happens in this world was caused in the spiritual world. In the spiritual world, certain things happen which cause events in this world. Okay, so it would appear initially that the cause and effect happens milamalo lamata, from the spiritual into the physical world. But we'll see in a minute, that's not quite so straightforward. Let's go into the second paragraph. Hanivroim agashmiim, the physical universe, yuduim heim etzleinu, we know about it. V'chukosei mishmotei mativiim, and the nature and the laws and the regulations. I mentioned to you before that the Ramchal in the 18th century was very interested in science and Renaissance science and the beginning of new scientific knowledge. Isaac Newton and others who were contemporaries of his, and the new understandings of the physical universe. But before some, it's well known. So he says, the physical world is well known and well studied and well described. Acharuchaniim, but when we start talking about the spiritual world, Aleph Aleph. Can you see the second line starts with the word Aleph Aleph? And I've warned you before about Aleph Aleph, right? Aleph Aleph is one of those Rosh Tevis, which you have to get it right. You know, sometimes it means Avram Avinu, and sometimes it means E. Efshar, and sometimes it means Eshes Ish. It's got about 20 different meanings, and if you get it wrong, you've got the whole paragraph wrong. You've got to say, anyhow, here, Aleph Aleph means E. Efshar. It's impossible. E. Efshar. Right? We can't describe exactly spirits. We can't describe to you what is a neshama or what is a malach. We don't have the vocabulary for it. We don't have the measuring tools for it. Excuse me. We can't even imagine exactly a spiritual being and describe it adequately. So then how can we talk about it? All we've got is the Maseiros. So we have a Torah, and the Torah gave us Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebalpeh. In the Torah, there are descriptions, right, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the Adam HaRishon a neshama, and that Adam and Chava had this neshama. This neshama had a eternity to it, and about Olam Haba and about Malachim. All these things we only know through the Maseiros. Once one disconnects from the Maseiros, meaning received knowledge, the knowledge we've received from earlier generations, we lose track of any of these things, and we end up. That's where the word Apikoros comes from. Some of you might be aware of this. The word Apikoros was the first Greek philosopher whose name was Epicurus, E-P-I-C-U-R-U-S. Epicurus was the first Greek philosopher to roll out a complete philosophy based on the idea that nothing exists other than the physical world. There is nothing beyond the physical world, physical pleasures, physical sensations, physical experiences. There is nothing more than that. Right, this was the ultimate, was later called the reductionist attitude to life, and that's Epicurus. Epicurus denies the existence of God or any of the values connected to God or any spiritual life after death. That was Epicurus, and hence the word Epicurus came to be a general sort of term for an Epicurus, for a denial of the fundamental principles of Jewish life. His writings actually were quite interesting, and you should. Epicurus was quite interesting. What he, for some reason, he actually managed from this very materialistic philosophy to come out with ideas about, and therefore you have to live a life of moderation and not to go to extremes. And to, he's very strange, actually a very strange author, but he was one of the famous Greek philosophers. Anyhow, v'hinei min ha'ikrim ha'gedolim shebiyodeinu b'inyan zeh. But one of the main ikrim, okay, so here he's bringing down different principles. So the Rambam gave us 13 ikrim, which were 13 animamins, which was about our emunah. But here the Mekubalim, Kabbalists, introduce us to other ikrim, other principles. Min ha'ikrim ha'gedolim, I'm in the third line here, the second paragraph. Shu keneged, the word keneged here is an important word, that corresponding, kol mash nimtza b'nimtzoyim ha'shvalim, corresponding to everything that exists in our world, nimtzoyim lemalo kochos nivdolim, there exists corresponding spiritual forces, shemehem mishtalshlim v'yotzim, from which the physical world derives itself. In other words, there are malachim looking after the plants, and malachim looking after the animals, malachim looking after the different nations, and there are forces in the spiritual world which connect to all physical existence. Hashfalim o'ele, heimu mikreim, v'nimtzoyim ha'koch, sahem shoroshim, v'nimtzoyim hashfalim o'ele. In other words, the spiritual world is the shoresh. So every human being, let's focus on the human being for a second, every human being has a physical existence in this world, but has a shoresh, has its roots, lamala. They have roots in the spiritual world. Those are the roots. Right? In fact, the Maral writes in one place, the Pasuk says, ki ha'odom eitz hasodeh, compares the human being to a tree. Adam eats asada, whatever that means. I won't go into that now. And the Maral writes in a couple of places, it's true we are an eitz, like an eitz, but we are an eitz hafuch, an upside-down tree, with our roots bashamayim. We have our shoresh, the root of the human being is in heaven, right? And his actions, his or her actions in this world, affect the shoresh lamala, affect the shoresh above, and lots of different types of roots, right? Roots here, R-O-O-T-S, right? Not R-O-U, but R-O-O-T-S. Our roots, our shoresh, is lamala. In fact, one of the more mystical commentators relates to the way we wear our tefillin. Right, on the tefillin, some of you are aware of the fact that on the tefillin, we have on one side a shin with three heads, and on the other side, a shin with four heads. the Tefillin Shel Rosh. Right? What is this? First of all, there is no such letter, the Hebrew alphabet, as a shin with four heads. It doesn't exist. Right? So we have a shin with three heads and a shin with four heads, and this comes from Kabbalistic ideas that the human being has got seven different roots connecting him to his neshama lamala, and these, each one of these heads of the shin is a root. So this is, if you can imagine, the Tefillin Shel Rosh are your roots. You're plugging, when you put on Tefillin Shel Rosh, you're plugging in to the neshama, to the Shoresh HaNeshama, to the roots of the neshama above, in this seven. Why seven? Okay, that's a whole different story, but this is the origin of these shins that we have on the Tefillin Shel Rosh. We're connecting to the Shoresh, and that's, he uses here this word Shoresh, here in the last, on page one, the last two lines of the last paragraph, says Heim HaShoroshim LeNimtzoi Mashvalim Eila. Everything that exists in the lower world, the Shafel world, meaning the physical world, has its Shoresh above. VaNimtzoi Mashvalim, and everything that you see in this world, what are they? They are Anofim, they're simply branches of those roots. For told us, the Kochos Ahim, V'nikshayim zeh b'zeh k'taba'ot ha-shalshelet. Very interesting. It's like a chain. There's the rings of a chain, right? Connect the spiritual world to the physical world, and particularly through the human being. Because the human being is the only being that has both. The physical is amphibian, as I mentioned before, has both a connection to the physical and the spiritual world. And it's this connection that the Ramchal deals with in some great length. I won't be able in this shiur to really go through all the details about how he describes it. But he starts off by saying that simply the way in which things exist in this world derive from a spiritual reality. If you turn over the page, he then gives you one all-important exception to this rule. In other words, until now he has said that simply the physical world is controlled by the spiritual world above. Now he's going to say to you that actually, as I've written in here halfway through this page, that there exists a two-way traffic. He doesn't use the word two-way traffic, incidentally. There exists a two-way traffic between the physical and the spiritual world. In other words, largely it is controlled from above to below. But there is one exception to that, and that is the human bechira. The human being, through his own choices, can affect the world above, can actually make changes in the spiritual world. And this is a very important principle in all mystical writings of Gedolei Yisrael, that in actual fact, there was a sefer written by Rechaim Volozhin, the Nefesh HaChaim, where the whole sefer revolves around this one idea. Right? How, by doing mitzvahs or averus, a person can affect positively or negatively the spiritual worlds and his own neshama and the fate of mankind, really. This is really one of the most graphic, beautiful graphic examples of this idea, is the famous dream of Yaakov with the Malachim Olim V'Yomridim. The Malachim are Olim V'Yorid. The Malachim are going up and down. Notice they're not going down and up. In other words, the Malachim are not coming from above down, controlling what's going here. They are first Olim and then Yorid. Olim means that from the work of Yaakov Avinu, he created Malachim which can affect the state of the spiritual world, and then that has a corresponding effect in the physical world. In other words, it's only the human bechira which can affect the way in which the spiritual world develops. And this is, let's have a look here what he says. V'hinei, everybody with me? I'm on page two at the top of the page. V'hinei, lefi shorish zeh, according to what I've just been writing, tchilas kol ha'avoyos lamala b'kochos elyonim. Everything begins in the spiritual world above. For so from Lamata Basholim, and they have their effects in the physical world. For Chain Tchilas Kolin Yonim Ischadshim, Lamala, was so from Lamata. Everything that happens new in this world starts above and ends below. Omnom, he says, however, Prat Echod Yesh. There is one thing, Sheyotze Min Akla, which is an exception to this rule. Huma Shenogel Bechiroson Shel Odom. This is if a person uses his or her bechira, his freedom of choice, properly. Kikivun sherotza ha'odon isprog shmoshia yecholis la'odon. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted that the human being should have that freedom. Livcha b'mashiyirtim min ha'tov min ha'ra, to choose between good and evil. Hine osohu bilti tolui bo b'zulosan. He's completely free to do so. Nothing in the spiritual world forces a person to either do a mitzvah or an aveira. He is, if you like, a completely uninfluenced, new creation. He's able to create something completely new, right? The Adaraba, Nosan Lo Koach Leos Meinia Laola Meyatzer. Meinia means he can affect the world. The Briyosef Kafimash Yivcha Bechevza, right? The human bechira has the power to affect the spiritual world and cause it to change. This is I did mention before in previous class that the word bechira is often sort of overused. Bechira means choices, but the truth is most of what we call our choices in life are not a bechira. And if you choose coffee instead of tea, or you choose to have breakfast or not have breakfast, that's not a bechira, right? Bechira is not about trivialities. Bechira is only where you make a choice which is of spiritual significance. You choose to do a mitzvah or not to do a mitzvah. You choose to let your negative forces, your anger or greed or whatever it is, you choose to let it control you, or you choose not to let it control you. That's a bechira. Bechira is only with regards to choices of spiritual significance. And it's certainly possible for a human being to go through his whole life and not use bechira at all. You could just lead a life of sort of going with the flow and making choices which are instinctive and instinctual and not having any spiritual content at all. So the use of bechira is a significant moment in one's life. But when you do use your bechira, you're not only doing the right thing, but in the Kabbalistic system of ideas, you're actually creating malachim. You're creating forces, right, in the heavenly world, which then are able to make a difference down here. Olim v'yoridim. In other words, the malachim that you create, these malachim in Yaakov's dream were created by his mitzvahs and by his bechira. And they are going up the ladder to Shemayim, and then Yodim, and then they come back down again to improve, to have a positive effect in this world. So the performance of mitzvahs, the act of the Bechira, is considered to be a creation of Malachim and a creation of forces which then affect the world. And this is a very powerful idea, which appears in lots and lots of different contexts, whether it's tefillah, whether it's chesed, different the idea of what sometimes referred to as middah keneged middah, right? The Gemara in Shabbos says, kolam arachim al habrios, merachamim olav min hashamayim. If somebody exhibits rachmonus and tzedakah and helps other people, then he creates malachim, which then in some way come back down and affect him similarly. In other words, the malachim of chesed are some of the most powerful malachim around. And these malachim are achameyav esrim, they are his counsel for the defense. The malachim that have been created by the mitzvahs are the sanegor, the counsel for the defense of the human being, and say, look, we were created by all his mitzvahs, all his chesed, all his tefillahs, all his shabbosos, all these things create malachim, and this in some way is described in greater detail by the Ramchal in the Derech Hashem. So let's go a little bit further. We still have a few minutes. Let's go. V'nimtzu ba'olam beiz tenuos. I'm in the second paragraph on page 2. Right, so I'm reading the second paragraph. V'nimtzu ba'olam beiz tenuos kololios hofchios. The Hebrew language here is very beautiful. He writes Hebrew, the Ramchal, in such a beautiful, concise, and accurate way. says there is in the world two sort of directions. Tnuot means movements. There's two directions of forces. Tnuot klaliot, two general directions. Hofchios, in opposite directions. Two, that's what I call a two-way traffic. Right? There is two-way traffic here. Ho'achas tivis, muchrachas. One of them is natural. What is the natural one is the natural way in which the spiritual world affects the physical world. Vasheni bechiris. And the second is the direction of the bechira, which works in the opposite direction. It works, what's sometimes referred to as isaruso de lataton, means it starts from below. It doesn't start from above. It starts from below. In this week's Parsha, actually, it's quite interesting. In Parsha's Boi, so Moshe Rabbeinu tells Klal Yisrael that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has promised, it's time for Yetzias Mitzrayim, and everything's going to happen, right? And then suddenly in Parsha's Boi, they are told that they need to do two mitzvahs. They need to do Korban Pesach and Bris Milah, without which they can't get out. So you think to yourself, well, wait a minute, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu has promised that it's going to happen, and given a shavua to the others that it's going to happen, and has given Moshe Rabbeinu a guarantee that it's going to happen, why is it important for us to do these mitzvahs? Right? And there's an interesting Rashi on this, actually. Ramasya ben Cheresh, in chapter 12, I think, Pasuk 6, the interesting Rashi on that, the Rashi says something very interesting. Higia hashah, the time had come. Eis dodim, the time had come for the Geula. But Klal Yisrael didn't have mitzvahs to be able to connect to that Geula. In other words, even though HaKadosh Baruch Hu has decided that it's going to happen, it still needs the Bechira of the individual human beings to somehow do mitzvahs which will connect to make us in some way worthy recipients of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Geula, and in some way our mitzvahs then affect the spiritual world and can bring about the Geula. Now it has to be the right time, but once it's the right time, it's still not going to work without the mitzvahs, right? So that's what Rashi there says. Higia eis dodin, the time for the Geula arrived, but mitzvahs lis'asik bohem, they didn't have mitzvahs to be busy with, they didn't have the mitzvahs. And therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, look, you got to do Korban Pesach, put the blood on the doorpost and do the Bris Milah. B'domayi chayi, and of course, not all of Klal Yisrael was willing to do that. And only those who were willing to do that could be part of Geulas Mitzrayim. So it's a very interesting, this correlation between the Hashgacha from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which he calls the if you like, Isaruso de la Eilah, that it's a decision from above to make sure things happen down below, but it can't work without the Isaruso de la Tata, which means the human Bechira has to engage with mitzvahs in order that we can connect to the Ratzon Hashem. And it's that connection which is the key also to the whole of Yetzias Mitzrayim, and the whole of Parshas Bo actually surrounds this particular idea. You've had all the makas, by the time you get to Parshas Bo, you've had all the makas, you've had the promises, you've had the shavua and everything, but it's still not going to work unless they do mitzvahs. And this mitzvah, why? Because you need the bechira of the individual to be able to make sure that it's going to work. Even though the truth is in Yetzias Mitzrayim, almost everything that happens in Yetzias Mitzrayim, it happens as a nace from HaKadosh Baruch Hu without our involvement at all. Right, the Kriyas Yamsuf, the Pasuk says, Hisyatzva Ru'uz Yeshua Hashem, do nothing. Do nothing. Right? Don't even fight. Don't even daven. Just Hisyatzva Ru'uz Yeshua Hashem. Just, what do you say? Oh, so that's a very interesting thing. That's very interesting. Because Moshe doesn't say that, does he? He doesn't say that. He says, Yazir Yeshua Hashem, Kasher Isa Mitzrayim Hayom, Lo Sasif and Rosa Madalam, Hashem Yilachem Lachem, Vatem Tacharishon, Tacharishon, Tacharishon means garnished, do nothing. And yet, they understood, Nachshon Ben Aminadab understood, that there's no such thing as doing nothing. We've got to show that we are worthy of this, and he went into the water. He went into the water with confidence and with certainty, even though it seemed to be completely impossible. It seemed to be completely impossible. That's Jewish history, right? I recently, a couple of years ago, I was Masada Kiddushin for a young couple, young English couple, were married in a little town, a little yishuv in this country called Nachshonim. Ever heard of Nachshonim? Anyway, Nachshonim. So I did a bit of homework. What is Nachshonim? Why did they call this place Nachshonim? And apparently it was a whole group of original settlers in Israel, the pre-Medina, who came to Israel, even though everyone told them it was impossible, even though it looked impossible and it felt impossible. And when they came to Israel, they settled in this little area, and they said, what are we going to call this place? So they said, who are we? Anachnu Nachshonim. That's what we are. We are Nachshon Ben Aminadav. We are jumping in the water, even though we know it's impossible to walk through the water. And it's impossible to swim through the water. But we're diving in with Emunah. Anachnu Nachshonim. I was quite moved by that. Like, the people, we are Nachshon Ben Aminadav, right? But it's very interesting that, because Moshe Rabbeinu says to them, look, this is going to happen milamala lamata. Kadosh Baruch Hu has decided, Yetzias Mitzrayim, get rid of the Egyptians, Vatem Tacharishu. And yet, interestingly, this whole business of Nachshon Ben Aminadav is not mentioned in the Pasuk anywhere. It's all in Chazal. Right? Although there is a remez in the pasuk, because it first says that Bnei Yisrael holchu besoch hayam by Yabosha, and only afterwards it says that they went by Yabosha besoch hayam. So Chazal say when they went besoch hayam by Yabosha, it means they dived in. There wasn't yet Yabasha, wasn't yet dry. They dived in besoch hayam. That's next week's parsha, right? It's Bashalach. This week is Boy. But Bashalach, Besoch Hayam, they went in Besoch Hayam. But it's beautiful. This idea is that it required some act of Bechira. It couldn't happen without Klal Yisrael engaging with some act of choice, similar to the Korban Pesach and the Bris Milah, which made it possible for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to bring about the Geula the way it happened. And then in the last paragraph, he simply brings one caveat to all this. He says, sometimes there is a divine plan, which really sort of goes beyond all these forces, both the power of Bechira and the power of the forces above. Or it's Ulam Tzorech Shateda. I'll just read this last paragraph and then we'll finish. Shateda ki gam ha'odam atzma eino kol maiso bechirim, ava yeshmeh mishiyu mitzad bechiroso. It's true that the human being has got freedom of choice to do whatever he wants, but for yesh acherim, but some human activities, she is so viv lehem mitzad gezeiro elyon, which are really predetermined. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants it to happen, and it'll happen whatever you want, whatever you like. L'schor l'on shov ulam b'mashu nimshach ha gezeiro. Okay, I won't go into this now in detail. It's a subject for a later shiur. So he says there are basically three different systems going on here. There is the way in which the spiritual world affects the physical world. There is the way in which human bechira can affect the spiritual world. And then there is the third force, which is simply a divine plan. Right? As in, for example, Geulas Yisrael, that was part of the divine plan, the Eitz Dedim. But even that required a certain a minimal amount of mitzvahs in order for Klal Yisrael to participate in the Geula. I hope I've given you a little bit of a sketch of the Rabbi Shechaim Lutzato and his understanding, and the Ramban, the way in which the physical and spiritual worlds interact. And we're going to go further, please God, next week. Nice to see you all. Thank you.